Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Most entrepreneurs look at their numbers and feel a little bit confused, maybe even a little bit ashamed. It's not that they're dumb, it's that the data is written in a foreign language, one meant more for accountants over us owners. That's where today's guest, Spencer Sheenan, comes in. Spencer is a former contractor turned CEO of Shift Financial and the author of the best-selling book, Entrepreneur Numbers. His mission? To flip the script from financial literacy to financial empowerment. It's a subtle but powerful difference. See, one's about knowing the rules. The other one's about using them to win. In this episode, we talk about turning your financial numbers into an actual story through some pretty effective visuals. So if you're on the audio version, make sure you check out the YouTube version to get a look at them. Three financial levers that every contractor, I think, needs to understand, and how to select and operate the right financial team to make sure you're being backed up properly. He's also included a really cool benchmarking tool with a link in the description, so make sure you check that out. But without further ado, let's get started with Spencer. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Spencer, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
We've got lots to get through, all things financials, and hopefully not very boring. I've seen your presentation before. You do a phenomenal job of presenting this and
thank you.
Really flipping what is traditionally quite a boring topic on its head and really making, I think, quite engaging and quite, well, visually appealing, to say the least, to give you a little prelude. But I'm stoked to talk to you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, our goal is to make accounting not suck for business owners and leaders. So
is that the tagline of the business?
I think you said it well. Accounting doesn't have to suck. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, let's start because not everybody knows you. I know you a little bit because I've spent some time with you in the past, but you did run a contracting business at one point in your life. You now run Shift Financial. Kind of an interesting like path to get there, but like, tell us a bit about how this all came to be and why you even started Shift Financial. What's the mission behind it and how'd you get here?
Yeah. Awesome. So, it's a little bit of a winding thing, so I'll give the abridged version, but like I did my CA, now CPA, pretty much straight out of university, was an investment banker for a year, and I was physically nauseous doing both of them. I hated it. I hated accounting. I love numbers, but I hated accounting, and I ended up buying a business with my business partner, and literally in my mid-20s, and we made skincare products, as crazy as that sounds, sunscreen, lip balm. Like what guy in his 20s didn't want to own a skincare manufacturing business? I had that business for 15 years, and that same partner owned a construction business. He was a custom high-end homes in Vancouver, and he invited me into that business to help build process around it and help extract him from the day-to-day. Turns out he was the competitive advantage of the business. It's hard to put a process around somebody who's that unique. He was a very special builder. And I also became a partner in a family business, which was Cold Storage. We had three refrigerated warehouses in Washington State. So I had all of those. And then post 2008, I had a real estate business in Seattle. I had a construction business of high-end homes post 2008 in Vancouver, and this other business that I was never in love with. So it took me about 5 years to extract myself from all of those, best described as not as well as I would have liked, but better than it could have been. And then I was kind of like, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And I was actually at a finance talk, and the way you described it before, like being painful and whatever, is that the speaker, it was a room full of business owners. You know, I am an accountant, so I was working really hard to keep up. And I was like, okay, got it. Like, he was really technical and fast. I'm like, I got it. And at one point I put my hand up. I'm like, hey, don't you mean 2.4? I think he made a mistake. And everyone's laughing because they're like, I can't even keep up. But Spencer's here correcting him. And I knew most of the people in the room. And one of the guys leaned over, goes, hey, I know this stuff's super important. I don't understand it. So can you help me put it in my business for me? And that was literally the spark that started Shift, which is, I believe entrepreneurs can change the world, and my role is to help them through their financial blind spot. That's our mission, is to solve accounting pain for small business by kind of my background as a business owner and understanding the needs of an owner, which is different than what accountants are taught and what we as accountants know. And there's just this bridge that's broken. And so how do I build a bridge to actually make accounting serve business owners rather than having accountants tell business owners they have to learn accounting?
And you wrote a book about it, Entrepreneur Numbers. Am I saying that right? Entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs. My dyslexic brain struggles with it every time I read it. Entrepreneurs. Is that the concept that we're going to go through today? Is just getting into like how do we take what is a traditional accounting approach and flip it on its head? Is that okay?
Yeah. And the way whenever I speak about this, and I've done like a couple talks in the last couple of weeks, it's really about how to empower the business owner to hold your accounting teams accountable to giving you the information you need to make proactive decisions in your business, but doing it in a way that's quick, simple, and intuitive for you rather than complicated and you got to figure out all this mess. Like I said, accounting should serve the entrepreneur. So how do you make it serve it where most of us as business owners who don't come from a finance track are always kind of like, well, I don't really know what the accountant, I don't know what to ask them. You know, I knew a guy who's had a business for 25 years. He once said to me, you know, I'm just not getting the information I need to run my business. Then he lowered his voice. He leaned in. He's like, I don't actually know what information I need. I just know I'm not getting it. And so, you know, we had a long talk about that. And how do we actually know, how do we build our skills to know what is it that we need, but do it in a way that serves us rather than accounting mumbo jumbo.
Financial uncertainty is one of the biggest things I see with our members coming in. And it's not just in contracting. It is literally in like so many small businesses. And yet we have people who are trained accountants who spend their whole careers learning how to do this properly for small business. There's a whole like section that this is what you focus on. How did we get this? How did we get here? How did we get to this big disconnect where these two parties are not communicating properly and haven't been for God, 50, 100 years? Like it's not working.
Oh, 200 years, I imagine. Yeah, sure. It's actually like my experience as an accountant was you came in and did something very specific, right? And so, you know, as accountants, we are taught debits and credits. We are taught to create financial statements. That is very different than business strategy. That is very different than KPI management. That is different than people management. And so for a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of accountants, especially those in small business, because here's the thing, if you were a really awesome accountant, where can you get paid more, in a big company or in a small company?
Mm. Yeah.
In a big company
all day long, of course,
If you're like a $1 or $2 million business, how much can you afford to pay your accounting team? Not very much. If you're a $5 billion business, you can be paying them hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the most sophisticated accounting, strategic, business-minded people tend not to go into small business. There's some exceptions to that. Like some people just love small business and hate big business. I've never been a big business guy. I've worked in a big bank. I've worked at a big accounting firm. I never liked it. But I think the problem really comes to that language barrier where it's like, as entrepreneurs, I use entrepreneur, business owner interchangeably. Sure. Yeah. As entrepreneurs, we're in the trenches. We're using a language. And then as business, as accountants, we're just taught a totally different language. And so we end up where the accountant doesn't really know what the owner needs and the owner doesn't know what to ask of the accountant. So there's this kind of like awkward thing. And you know, that my accountant never told me that is the other thing I hear a lot of complaints when I'm meeting business owners. My accountant never told me that. It's like, well, the accountant didn't know to tell you and you didn't know to ask for it. So we just have this language problem. You know, accounting is a technical language. I went to school to learn how to write, interpret, create financial statements. Most of your members, I bet 0.01% of your members have accounting degrees. So how do we expect owners to actually use these technical documents? You know, if you handed me a set of plans, I'd look at it and I'd be like, well, that's the front door, I think. Those look like stairs. I can't read plans, even though I used to own a construction business. I was just on the operational side. I can't do it. It's totally unfair. I actually had, I may have told you this story before. I had a new roof put on about 6 or 7 years ago and I had to sign the plans. I'm like, why are you getting me to sign the plans? And then I was mad because I have a flat roof and I want a slope roof for the rain. And he's like, but you signed the plans. I'm like, but I can't read these. I didn't know they weren't. So I don't know what these things are. It's the same thing in reverse. That's why we're just constantly frustrated and stuck because the system isn't set up for success.
There's very few people that do what you do. You are essentially a translator for the two parties and to bring them both together. And you've built a bit of a system around it as well, which is really cool.
I mean, you could, some people would call it like the polite way would be unicorn. In reality, I'm like, I have an accounting brain and a business owner brain. So imagine what's going on in here.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
Totally. So I want to get into this concept in the book. You discuss financial empowerment and it sounds cool, but there's a whole methodology behind this. Yeah. Let's just start with it. Like, what does it mean for a business owner to be financially empowered? How would you define that?
Yeah. So my definition is really simple and quick. Number one, I understand my current financial position. Number two, I understand that the three biggest issues facing the business through a financial lens. Number three, I have a plan of attack to deal with it. And that's done. It's quick, simple, and intuitive. That to me is empowered. I understand my financial position. I understand the key issues facing the business. I have a plan of attack to deal with it. Quick, simple, and intuitive. If you have that, you're pretty much empowered. I know that sounds short, but those are the steps in my mind to empowerment.
So how do we do this? I wrote a lot of notes from, you know, reading through your book and looking through your website and kind of getting some things prepared, but like there are just some key elements here. And do you mind if I just go through a couple of them, ask you like, how do we get empowered? How do we figure this out and walk through these three little steps? So the first, you talk about financial storytelling, and can you give me an idea of like, what is that even? And how does that look?
So when you think about a business, there's only three ways to increase the profitability of your business. You can increase sales, you can increase your gross margin, i.e. decrease your cost of goods, which for this industry, the people in these industries is going to be labor, materials, and equipment, maybe little bits other here and there, and then your expenses. And so what is the story? Which of those levers do I need to pull? Right? Because if you're trying to grow your business, but your margin is terrible, you're never going to get to profitability. If you've got really good margin, then you can start growing your sales. Like there's a story that emerges from these numbers. And it's actually starting with, if you find financials confusing, if you find it overwhelming, if you've got an income statement that's six pages long, you're like, this just, my brain hurts just thinking about it. Which of those levers do I need to pull? Where do I start the story? Do I need to grow sales? Do I need to improve my margin, or do I need to improve my expenses? That's pretty much it. Those are the only things you can do. Yes, you can have a strategy that pulls more than one lever, but the question that I love to keep asking is, which lever do I need to pull to increase the profitability of the business? And it starts with that. If we can start simple, level one, level two, and on the income state or the balance sheet is more complicated, but operationally, there's only a few things we can do. We can collect our money faster. We can turn our inventory faster, so it's not sitting on trucks and in warehouses, because that's just cash sitting out there. We can pay appropriately. You can slow things down without hurting your suppliers. Like those are the only three levers you can really pull on the balance sheet. Debt is a lever, equipment's a lever, but they turn slower. If you need a truck, you need a truck. That's a bit of a harder one. But those are really sales, cost of goods, expenses, AR, AP, inventory. Which of those six items are impacting my business the most, that if I fix that, it's going to increase my profit and or cash? Like that's where the story starts.
And this might sound too simple, but how do I identify that? Because I might be looking at my financial statements being like, we did about the same amount of revenue as last year. Costs are maybe up or high. Like, how do we start to identify which lever is the opportunity versus another?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love that one. So I love to look at a comparison to last year. So are we trending the right way, better or worse? Budget. If you don't have a budget, like this is, we're starting to like hold your accounting team accountable. Like we require a budget. If you can't do it, you're probably not the right people for us. And if you don't have those, and I know, cause I've seen your document, benchmarks, like you have industry benchmarks for a lot of the different, you know, I know you guys service quite a few different trades and home service businesses. You have a lot of those benchmarks. So how am I doing compared to industry? So if you compare those key levers against industry, and if you don't have, say, one of those, like, I don't know if you have an AR turns benchmark or not, but your bank probably does as well. So you can go to the bank and say, what kind of industry data? And by the way, getting industry data, it can be expensive. So you can buy it, but your banker will probably give it to you. So now I can compare, how am I doing compared to last year? How am I doing compared to budget? And how am I doing compared to a benchmark? And which of those levers? And this is where kind of that empowerment starts to come in, when you're saying, well, how do I know? Like, this is where the empowerment as the owner going, like, okay, tell me, you show me these key levers. And I know we're probably going to talk about the pictures in a minute, but show me these key levers so I know which one I need to pull. And if you're really consistent year over year and budget's the same, okay, now we can start to, and I mean, you guys have coaches, right? That's what your coach is for as well. Go through this data with your coaches, and your coach is going to help you understand, okay, well, this part of the business is lagging.
Can you, I know for some of those on audio, you guys should probably jump on YouTube and check this out, but can you just show us the visuals? Can you run me through that exercise we did a couple of weeks ago and just show me the visual version of this and the non-visual version of this? Because this was for me, I was like, this is so simple, but I was surprised. Yeah. I was like, how have people not figured this out yet? Especially when an accountant goes and works with a bunch of small business owners, they don't address it in this way. So can you pull these up?
Yeah. So I do time. I can sort of just go through like a, maybe like a 2 to 3 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Or is that going to take too long?
Let's do it.
Okay. So, when you ask the question, and I should have just deferred straight to the chart when you said, how do I know how to compare? So when you look at this, the chart's on the left-hand side, and I'll do my best for those listening. These are just line charts, right? You know, a picture's worth 1,000 words. Our brains see images faster than it does letters and numbers. 99.0% of the information in our brain gets transmitted through pictures. So let's use pictures rather than letters and numbers. I don't actually have a financial statement available because I just usually don't show them, but we all know what financials are like. So on the left side, this is your results for the individual months. And on the right side, it's the results for the year to date. The green line is this year. The blue line is last year. And the black line with the dots is your budget. I really fundamentally believe having budgets are important. I know they suck to put in place. It's one of the few things that I'm going to say, suck it up and get it done. But if you look at, we're just going to look at the year to date for the sake of time. And by all means, interrupt me if you have questions or want to kind of highlight anything here. But when we look at the year to date, we can see we're below last year and below budget. You don't have to be an accountant to figure that out. You don't have to look at long reports. It's instant and obvious. And similarly, I really love looking at a net income as a percentage of sales. It tells us how efficient we are. So if sales have doubled and profits the same, it means we're less efficient. So here we can see our net income as a percentage of sales is also below last year in budget. So you notice how we started with net income?
Yeah.
I didn't start with sales. I didn't, right? Like net income, like, and I would also start with cash flow as well, but that's on a different document. I can show that in a bit if you'd like. But starting with net income, and then we go to those three levers. So here's where the story starts. Lever number one, sales. We can see green line a bit above budget and a bit above last year. So the sales lever looks good. Gross margin. So this is the, of course, the opposite of cost of goods. So gross margin is lower than last year in budget. So that's a red flag. And by the way, the data you're looking at is real data. We've sanitized it to protect the names of the company, but this is real data. So this is a gross margin problem. Then we go to operating expenses. We can see it's a little bit above last year in budget. But if we look at it as a percentage of sales, and I'll zoom in because it's hard to see, it's right behind budget. What this is telling me is even though we spent more because we overachieved on our sales, we're still spending according to our spending target percent. So we're still as efficient. So when we look at the income statement, we know our sales lever is good, our expense lever is okay, and our gross margin lever is a problem. So if this is your business, what do you need to fix first? What lever do you need to pull?
Operating expenses.
That's not a rhetorical question. Get in there.
I'm trying to see the charts. Ask me again.
So which lever would you want to pull first, knowing if you know sales is green, gross margin is red, and operating expenses is green?
Yeah, so my variable expenses likely if my gross margin's not doing well.
It's your gross margin, exactly.
Yeah,
so you got technical and you said variable expenses, right? And then the other thing you can do, and I'm going to skip through the balance sheet just in the interest of time, but the other thing you can do is there's an equation that you can ask your accountants to do. And again, when I talk about the empowerment, I'm not asking any of you who are listening to go out and do this reporting and create this. This is the standard where you say, bring me my levers in line chart format or whatever chart format works for you so you can see it and instantly understand it. So here, what we've done is we've gone away and we've calculated for each of those levers, what is the dollar impact on the business? How much is it costing you that this is off? And again, if you look at this, you can see what's the biggest negative number here? Well, pretty obviously.
Well,
COGS.
It's gross margin, the one I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's your COGS slash gross margin. So we need to go fix that first. Right. And so that's the step one of it, where you can actually just start to understand what's going on with my business. Remember that what empowerment meant, I understand my financial position. I understand the key issues facing the business, and I have a plan of attack to deal with it. Hopefully what your members have just seen is empowerment step number one is I understand my financial position. I know sales is good. I know expenses are good, and I know COGS is a problem. Do I understand the key issues facing the business? Well, we know it's COGS, and we can start to drill down from there if you want to go deeper. But I think we've given kind of the high level sense of it. But I'm happy to keep going deeper if you like.
It's fine. From a high level, you're starting to get an idea of where things are at. Then you can go deeper down from there. So and you're using primarily, it looks like you're using the actual budget that you like set with the business owner, and you're using their last year actuals. Benchmarks aren't in there, but they could be if you could get them. Is that true?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, that's the empowered piece, is if you want it against benchmarks. The reason I do find when there's too many lines on the chart, it just starts to get a little bit hard to kind of pick apart. And if somebody's got a really good budget, I think that's a little bit more meaningful. I like benchmarks if there's no budget, and I like benchmarks as like a quarterly or annual review. Where do we need to focus overall? But we're here now. So practically, what's our budget?
And I think a lot of our members love budget or benchmarks too, because they don't know what they don't know, right? So they're like, what is good? Yeah. And so they've been doing this for 20 years, let's say, like they don't know what good could even be. And it really opens everybody's eyes, because there's always some numbers that you just assumed, oh, that's just how it's always been. And there's always a few big gaps. Yeah. You're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's what our labor expense should be. I thought
expenses are this high.
Yeah, totally.
I thought it was cheap.
It brings a lot of things to life. So that's amazing. And then I do want to ask about this. So you would help somebody build, say, a budget, because I know a lot of our members come in and I say, how many of you guys have an annual budget? And 10, 20% kind of ish. Like it's not, zero. It's not a ton. How do you help somebody achieve building a budget, especially if it's for their first time?
Yeah. So I'll share, Shift clients, like we would guide them through the whole process. So like, I think it's accounting's responsibility, but I'll do here's five steps that if you need to build a budget and you've never done it before, how you do it. Number one, you as the owner need to set the sales budget. You just do. Nobody else is going to know what you have in mind or where you're going. You're the visionary. You're the one who's going to create that. So you create the sales budget. You also identify any major other changes. We're going to hire these people. We're going to open a new office. We're going to do these things that we know we're going to do. The third step is you give it to your accounting department, whether it's your bookkeeper, your controller. We can talk about the accounting stack at some point if you want, by the way, just to kind of, that's part of the problem areas. As I'm saying this, I realize we didn't talk about that before. But step three is you give it to your accounting department, your bookkeeper, your controller, to go build V1 of a budget. They should be able to, based on your sales forecast, the key issues and prior year's history, plus some assumptions, costs are going to go up by 3%, blah, 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 can build a V1 of a budget. Step four is you review it. If you don't know what you're looking at and you don't know what's going on with the budget, you smile and you say, great job, and put it in the system. And then you demand these charts. And when the actual and budget numbers start going way off, by the time you either rebudget or do a budget next year, you're going to have a better sense of what's good or not. And then step four or five, you then, if you don't like the budget and you know what you're doing, just send it back. Keep sending it back until you're happy with the outcome. But really, you're only, as an owner, you should be responsible for the sales forecast and any other key issues. And your accounting team should be developing the rest of it for you and bringing it for you. And guess what? Doing it in visual format, because a picture is worth 1,000 words, and you're going to understand it when you see it in a picture more so than you'll see it as a financial statement.
Can I get your thoughts on this? One thing we do with our members is we have them write notes on each one of their chart of accounts as far as like the amounts. And so there's reasoning or there's thought that's behind it. And we actually, as on the coaching side, we kind of force them to do it. Like we will certainly walk them through it a little bit, but I find by having them, they'll write in their labor percentage being 3% lower than the previous year. And I'm like, cool. Yeah. What's the action step that you're actually doing to create that 3% change, especially on percentages? Yeah. Dollars are different because revenue rises and lowers, things, go up and down as accordingly, but a percentage of revenue changes. What are you physically doing different? Let's make sure we write notes of this because these become action steps later on. Do you do that along the way as well?
So you're actually talking about what in a nerdy accounting speak is called flux analysis. Yeah. And it's actually a little bit backwards looking, and we'll add the forward looking. So a flux analysis is you look at the results for the current period compared to any relevant period in the past. It could be last month, it could be last year, it could be last quarter, whatever. And most businesses are relatively consistent over time. And so if there's a big change as a percentage of sales, and you can decide what big is in your business, but if there's a big change, there should be a logical explanation. And that actually does two things. One, what it does is it helps make sure there's not mistakes. Because if your payroll shows double, but you didn't hire anybody new, it means there's a mistake in your payroll. So that's kind of the accounting nerdy way of doing flux analysis. There should be intuitive reasons why things went up or down. And then number two, and if I can layer in almost like a bit of EOS speak here, is building the issues list. So if there is something that had moved a bigger and there's a reason for it, yes, absolutely. And that's the same thing. It's kind of the same, similar to like the levers, but now you're going into the deep dive, which is any line item that's moving by more than a certain amount, that's where the leverage is. Well, if labor went up by 3 or 4% year over year, that's a lot. And we have an opportunity. That's a lever we need to pull to figure out how to get labor back in line, or even better than it was last year, or even better than budget. So I love using what I like, what flux analysis, again, I can be a nerdy accountant for a bit, flux analysis to actually decide what are also, that's another way to look in and see what's going on and which levers do we need to pull, or sub levers, I would say.
So this gets me to my next question. I think you were alluding to before, but like selecting your financial team, because what we've just described, I'm sure some people are like, that would be amazing if I actually did that with my accountant. I've never done any of those things. So how do you find someone that will do this? And also, what are you even looking for when you're shopping for someone to help you in these things?
Yeah. So, and I should have gone to this at the beginning when you were asking about why do we have such a problem between, you know, accountants and entrepreneurs, business owners is, you know, when you think about building a house, it's super obvious. We have a general contractor, we have sub trades, and we have maybe a laborer or two, depending on the size of the project. We all know that. That's obvious. The same stack exists in the accounting department, but I think of it more in terms of the function rather than the role. So at the bottom of the stack is the transaction function. That's the day-to-day stuff. You're entering your AP, your AR, your invoices, your payroll, just all the basic stuff. Usually that's done by a bookkeeper or clerk. And above that is the reporting and compliance function. And I know I'm going on a bit of a tangent, but this is going to, I'll circle back in a minute. It'll make a lot of sense. In that reporting and compliance function, the reporting is the financial statements, the budgets, the cash flows, but it's the compliance that's often missed. And compliance for me, I even think accountants find the compliance annoying. And I don't mean tax. I mean like, what's your procedures manual, your SOPs in accounting? So things are done the same way every time. What systems are you using? How's your chart of accounts set up so that you can extract the data to do the flux analysis and the levers analysis? So all of that, typically that's handled by a controller. And at the top of the stack, the equivalent of the general contractor is going to be the your CFOs, your directors of finance. That's the strategic function. They're helping you look at your business through a strategic lens. What if we change our pricing model? What if we open a new location? What if we add a new service line? So those are all the functions. But for a lot of businesses, and I'm sure you see this a lot with your members, is smaller businesses, we can't afford the whole stack. So we hire a bookkeeper to run our whole accounting department.
Yeah.
Well, that's like hiring a laborer to build your house, right? Like they might know some plumbing, they might know some electrical, they might know some carpentry, but you'd never hire a laborer to build your house. But we constantly hire bookkeepers to run our entire accounting department. So when it's like, who's going to do this? Who should do this? Really the budgeting, that's at the controller level. That's at that reporting and compliance level. The transactions, that's your bookkeeper. And so you're like, well, what do I do? I'm a one, I'm a two, I'm a $3 million business. I can't afford this, right? So that's the other reason we get into so much trouble, because we're going to somebody for the wrong thing. You know, the other example is like going to your, you've got a problem with your eyes and you go to a knee doctor, like it's, you're just not going to get what you need. So that's the problem. So, you know, and I mean, I say this not in a salesy way, but most businesses of that size don't need a full-time controller, a full-time bookkeeper, and a full-time CFO. So outsourcing is a good option. And that you can actually have all those levels and a bit of each. You know, I don't have a marketing department because I don't need a full-time marketing person, but I have a marketing outsourcer that I need. I don't have a full-time lawyer. I have an outsourced lawyer that we use. You know, all of us use outsourcers, and just the ability to outsource in accounting is a lot stronger right now. And if it's helpful, I can give you a few questions. If you're going to interview an outsourcer or ask for an outsourcer, what you should be asking to make sure you're getting a good quality one, because like every industry, there's good ones and there's bad ones.
I will. I'm actually also just curious, like if you're, and it's broad strokes, but we're talking contracting. When am I big enough to get a bookkeeper full time? When am I big enough to get more of a controller in full time? And when am I big enough to get that CFO strategist? Like, what are the general, this is going to be very general, but like, what are the general, like, revenue ranges for businesses in the contracting space to start to add these types of roles into their organization?
So I would actually challenge that, and I would do it a different way.
Sure.
I would actually ask the question, at what point can I afford a CFO? Because if you're hiring a full-time bookkeeper, and they don't have anybody else in the accounting stack, that controller or CFO function, who's managing them? And if you as a contractor are managing your bookkeeper, like how effectively could I manage a contractor building my house? Like I can't, like I don't understand. So that's where the fail comes in. So I would actually think like the recipe I would do is I would actually hire somebody who can give me the accounting stack until, and it depends on which business in there. Like if you're a general contractor versus say an HVAC contractor, that's very different because the margins are so different and the scale of the businesses tend to be different. But I, like for us, we tend to graduate our clients when they get to about 15 million, 1.5, because that's where you can start to afford some more sophisticated financial help. You could probably get at least a fractional controller, a fractional CFO, and that person can now build the team below them. But if you're starting to build from the bottom up, that would be like, you know, again, me trying to run a construction job. I don't know what I'm doing. And if I'm hiring, you know, I don't know what to look for in a plumber. I don't know what to look for in a HVAC. Like I just don't know. That's what the senior person is for, is to also build the structure of the department. So I would say if it's me and you're only hiring a bookkeeper, it's like, you know, is the magic number 2 million? I get a full-time bookkeeper. I think that's a fail. I think you're going to end up with an accounting stack problem. And you're going to be saying that my accountant never told me that because you've got a bookkeeper doing everything. You don't have that compliance. You don't have that strategic function. So I'd start by outsourcing until I got to 15 plus million. Now I should be able to afford somebody sophisticated enough to run that department for me, because you are not going to be the person to run that the same way I am never going to run a construction job. That's not judgment. That's just skill set and where we've come from.
That is such an important distinction, because I think that so many people, even in my question to you, was they think, well, what can I afford? Well, I can finally, we're at 3 million. We can get our own bookkeeper. And that's often what happens. But like you just said, who are they reporting to? Usually the owner, which is like a little bit aimless. So you're saying wait till you get to, again, business sizes can change based on, custom homes are vastly different than residential repaints.
Exactly.
But generally, let's call it 15 million for example's sake. And then you're like, financially, this makes sense to add a $200,000 salary into the company, or maybe a fractional person.
At 150 plus or, you know, half of that for a fractional. I would say though, general contractors, I would put in a bit of a different category than I would say subtrades. And the reason I say that is general contractors, and I did own a contracting business, even though I don't understand construction. There's a bit of a different demand and a bit of a different pace in that business. So I would actually be looking for a controller. A really strong controller for kind of small businesses, you probably don't really need much of that CFO. CFOs are more if you're buying a business or financing or doing something, their mergers and acquisitions, that type of thing. So if you don't, but if you're a general contractor, I'd really be looking for a super strong controller who can actually help you do the job costing, because your project costing is so critical as a general contractor. Yes, job contracting is subtrades, but it's not quite as complicated. And the pace and the churn and the pace and the risk factor as a general contractor, if you're building a home or you're building a bunch of homes, the risk factor is a lot higher there if you miss something. We don't actually do general contractors because I know the complexity level and I know the pace it needs to churn. Whereas for us to do subtrades is like really, that's our sweet spot, because, you know, it doesn't have like, yes, it's important to get the numbers. Yes, it's important to get it quick. But with a job, like you need people on the project costing all the time for a general contractor. So I think that the number comes down a little, and I'd be looking for a CFO, or I'd be looking for a strong controller at 5 million as a general contractor. I don't know what you do before then, because it's just hard.
It's good. It's just your opinion. That gives us some guidance. So I appreciate it. And you know a lot it's more just than hard. Most of
like
us.
General contracting, I think, is a really, really difficult, complicated business.
I see it all the time. Yeah. And these projects are they're almost like a business in and of themselves. It's depending on the size of project that they're taking on. So. Yeah,
it totally is. And I mean, like, it's not to say subtrades are easy businesses. They're just not the same level of complexity
in that There's one area of the juggling. Business. I always call it the great equalizer of business. Every company has its own pitfalls and its own unique advantages. And so I agree with you. The financial controls.
Every owner I've ever met thinks their business sucks, by the way. Like the industry they're in sucks. It's like my industry sucks. Everybody thinks their industry sucks.
You know what I hear all the time? All the general contractors are like, man, these subtrades, their margins are just huge. Like I got into the wrong business. And then all the subtrades are like, man, these contractors, their average job size, average ticket size is just massive. You know how many jobs I have to book to get there? And then the guy, the window cleaner, is just like, you guys all suck. Like I have to do 400 jobs a day just to, it's like, guys, there's a great equalizer of business, and you all have advantages and disadvantages, and they transcend even the things you're talking about. But
Anyway. You know, I actually think that example was brilliant from what I was saying. Like, I didn't use an example, but it was just so good.
All right, let's keep going. So we've talked a bit about the financial team. If you want, yep. there's some questions that maybe we should ask. Is there anything specific that would be helpful if we're looking for someone to help us? We're not quite at 15 million. We're not quite at five. Maybe we need to go shopping for a vendor to help us in this. What are the things I want to look for or ask?
Yeah. I'll do kind of the abbreviated version really quick. Number one, show me a sample of your reporting package. So like, what do I get to see at the end of every month? If what you get is a set of financial statements, like I would run the other way. You need those visuals. You need to be able to look at that financial information. And after they run it through you once, just it should be simple, quick, and intuitive. So if you can't do that, if you don't have a report pack that's simple and intuitive, I'd say that's not the right partner for you. Number two, I would say, show me a sample of your procedures library or like SOP library. People are going to call it different things, but what are your procedures? They should have a standard list of procedures that they have that they customize for your business, and that becomes your library. I've heard of some accounting firms where it's like, oh no, these are our procedures. No, these are your procedures. You're paying for them, so you should get them in case you ever need to leave that accounting firm or somebody in your company leaves. Here are the procedures. Here's what you know to do exactly over and over and over. Those are a couple things just to start to test, you know, kind of how open they are. And what is the other? Yeah, just are they outsourced or are they kind of local, your team? And is it a rotating pool or are they static when my business? You can do overseas. It will be cheaper. I heard a saying a while ago, you know, if you pay peanuts, you're probably going to get monkeys. Not to say there aren't some great outsources overseas. I never was able to successfully do that and get the quality we wanted. And then is it a rotating team or not? Some external accountings, anybody will come in and do the transactions for you. You want to make sure you have a team that gets to learn and know your business. So those are just a few quick ones.
There's a story in your business, in your years, in your months, in all the things you're doing. And if no one's looking at that story and getting to know that story over time, a lot can get missed from, you know, your own financial operations in your company to your tax strategy and how you sit to just general awareness of how the business is progressing. And I've noticed that with our accountant, Ben, who's amazing. And he's gotten to know me. He knows my family. He knows a bit about my kids. Like these little things matter. And it's dramatically changed my strategy.
I was actually going to release
because he's looking out not just for.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I think I might be a little slow on my internet here, but I actually wanted to ping what you said there is they get to know you. You know, we also get to know the personality of the business owner. You get to know their nuances. You get to know when they're on time, when they're late. And so you can actually start to build procedures around their personality as well, not just the business and the nuance of the business. The working with the owners is actually one of the things we spend a lot of time talking about. How do we address the unique qualities of the business owner over time?
And there's so many unique things, like, you know, does my daughter get a subsidy based on her specific status? Is the way that I'm living with my in-laws, can I write off that as a tax thing? These are all personal things, but that can incorporate into so many things in your business, 10 times the things in your personal. And anyway, yeah, I won't give them the
with a little bit of a caveat that tax advice is typically outside of your internal accounting stack. They might know a little bit and help you with some of that stuff, but I would just be really clear that tax specialty is accounting is its own thing, and that's usually where you go to your external for. Just a little catch there.
Fair enough. Yeah, we have actually Violetta internally, who works through most of our financials, works with Ben externally, and actually you're right. I'm referencing Ben, our tax accountant. So. Good catch. It turns out I need some help on this too.
We all do. I have somebody in charge of my finance department, and it's not me. So we all need the insight.
There you go. Next thing I wanted to ask was just, so finance team, what about software and tools? Like, who's picking those? Is the company you're signing up with picking those? Are you picking those? Where's the line? Like, how do you figure out what software you actually need and what tools you actually need to do as well?
Yeah. I mean, that really falls in that reporting and compliance function. So like the compliance is like, that's selecting the accounting system. Like for us, we only work with people on QuickBooks Online. It's kind of like a Southwest Airlines model. Their pilots learn how to fly one type of plane. Their mechanics learn how to fix one type of plane. It's just a lot easier and it takes a lot of the noise out. And because we've built some software tools to enable our business, it's just a lot less complicated. You know, again, for most businesses that will be listening to this that are kind of, you tell me, up to 5 million, maybe there's a few that are bigger than that, but most businesses kind of fall into that smaller category. You know, accounting software is kind of accounting software if from the pure accounting point of view. So if it's, you know, a QuickBooks, you know, kind of whatever. QuickBooks Online is the biggest. Xero is not bad, but it's really designed less for accountants and more for owners. So if you have an accounting team, I actually would lean more towards a QuickBooks. When you get into the Sages, that's a little bit bigger. It's to me, it's going to be more important to figure out what operating software you need. So depending on your industry, what software best serves the operation. And I always like to think, you know, you don't want the tail wagging the dog. You don't want accounting telling you what accounting, what software you need to run your business. You need to say this software is going to help me be really efficient in my business. And you accounting need to find a solution that works with that. So don't let the tail wag the dog. Accountants love to say you need this, this, and this. No. Operations, what do you need? And accounting, we need to flex around that.
What project management software, what CRM do I want to pick? Okay, great. What integrates seamlessly with that? Okay, cool.
Like that's we work really with a lot answer. Of people with ServiceTitan, for example, that works well with QuickBooks. But if you're on Jobber, QuickBooks work with that too. Like it just AccuLynx if you're in roofing, again, QuickBooks. But like start with the operations. Operations is more important than accounting, let's be honest.
Final question on this. How do you keep your data clean? Because one thing I've noticed with our members is they can follow all the graphs and charts and strategic things they want, but sometimes their data is not right and they don't discover it till later either. Yeah. And it can be some of the most horrific stories I've seen actually, because you just didn't even know. How do you keep it clean? And how do you check if it's clean?
Yeah. So love that question. So I call that like the accounting hygiene. Like, is the hygiene good, right? It's like the bathroom in a restaurant. And if you go into the bathroom in a restaurant and it's a absolute mess, you kind of assume the kitchen's the same and you kind of want to get out of there. So same thing in accounting, right? Like if you're a seller business, if you want to borrow money, if you want to try to make decisions, the hygiene's not clean, it's like the bathroom in the restaurant. So I'm going to tell you like a very short technical answer, and then I'll tell you the easy answer on how you can maybe figure out if you think it's clean for yourself. Number one, get that right accounting stack in there. You need a bookkeeper. You need the report. You need the transactional function, the reporting and compliance. And for most of the people listening, just a tiny bit of that strategic. That helps. But if your balance sheet is right, okay, this is a weird accounting thing. If your balance sheet is right, so is your income statement. Now, things may not be in the right place in the income statement, but your bottom line will always be right if your balance sheet is right. It's a weird thing about how double entry bookkeeping works. So the way to know is if every balance sheet account item, line item, is reconciled every month, you will know that your balance sheet is right. And a reconciliation simply says, this is what it says in my books, and this is how I can prove it's right. It's really that's it. And there's some accounting nerdy ways to do that. But if every balance sheet item is reconciled, your income statement will be right. And then if you put that flux analysis we talked earlier, where it's like, why is this up or down? If there's not a logical reason, there's probably an error there. You know, that's the other way to check if it's right. So if you do those two things, so my suggestion is if you're like, oh, how's my hygiene? You go to your bookkeeper and you're going to ask these three or four questions. Number one, show me my most recent bank reconciliation. And look, if it's June 1st, no, they're not going to give you May 31st or May to June.
They need a few days. Okay.
Sure. Take a week. But show me my recent bank rec. If you get, even if you have no idea what a bank rec is, that's okay. Just show me my most recent bank rec. If they can't give it to you in 30 seconds without an excuse or a story, red flag. Number two, show me all of my balance sheet reconciliations for last month. Again, give them a week or two to do it. Like, don't stress if it's the 15th and it's a month old. Not the end of the world, but if it's 2 months old, 3 months old, red flag. But the bigger thing is if they're like, I just need a few days. No, show me my bank. That's a red flag. What's another good one? Well, you can ask for visuals, you know, you can ask for that flux analysis. But those are the first two things that if you ask for those and you're not getting an immediate yes response, show me our job costing. That's the other one I blanked on a second ago. Show me our job costing for the last month. Show me all the jobs we did, how much labor and how much materials went to that job. If they can't provide those three things immediately without a long winding story, that's a red flag and you might have a problem. So the way that you're going to know your books are accurate is if you can provide reconciliations of every balance sheet account, even if you don't know what they look like, that's okay. If somebody goes, yeah, here they are, probably a good sign.
You know they're doing it monthly. You know they're keeping up with it. You know that things aren't getting kind of lost in translation. Yeah.
And it's not okay to not do it monthly. That's where the skeleton's in the closet. And that's, and I'd be shocked if not everybody, every member of BTA over the years hasn't had a surprise. Like what? A year end and a big one. And a big one that's like a kick in the nuts. And you're like, how? Like I've been busting my balls. And then I just got a big kick in the nuts at the end of the year that I wasn't expecting. It's because the reconciliations aren't being done.
So many of them, whether they're getting done or not,
so many
are not looking monthly. They're looking annually and they're kind of the fifth or accountant going to be like, so did we make money this year? And it's just like, dude, like you cannot be asking that question this late in the game. Like the whole game is over now. All your plays are lost. All your ability to adjust and shift. And anyways, the monthly financials is not just good for the ability to keep clean data. It's good for you to be able to make adjustments to your own organization. That's how you can tell what's really going on, especially job costing over a lot of these.
Yeah. So, and you know, people will often complain, you know, if accounting is backwards looking, and that's true. And if you're more sophisticated, you can have cash flow forecasts and budgets to look forward in a little bit. But the way I think about, here's another way to think about your accounting differently, is it's kind of like watching the game tape, you know, and you're looking for the root causes of what's causing you to not win, be it in financials and this part of your business, whatever. So when you're tracking it over time, it's like, okay, well, I can't do anything about we didn't make our margin on this job. We're 10, you know, we wanted a 40 margin, we got a 30. But what happened in that 10%? Because chances are there's a root cause that's actually inherent in the business that's a problem. We fix that problem, now we're going to fix it going forward. Yeah, you can't fix that one, but it's getting those root causes identified and then, you know, kind of sealing the leaks in the boat, as
plug
it were.
Plug in the hole.
Yeah.
I call it all the 1%. All the 1%. It's like, just get them at. The leaky buckets.
And if you can start with the 2%, then do the 1.5%, then do the 1%, start with the big ones and keep working your way down.
Makes sense. Let's cap off a few things here. We've gone through a lot. Like, what is it for someone who finds a lot of this conversation intimidating? Maybe they just want to make some simple, easy, quick moves. Like, what are some simple things that someone could take action on based on what we talked about today?
You know, when I hear that, part of me goes like, it's business, it's hard, and this has to be done right. And this isn't going to be the quick, easy solve. So if you're struggling with it, I think the answer is, number one, get the vision of where you're going. So, you know, hopefully you could see that package and you could see how easy it was to see those charts. Start demanding that, A, bring me my information in a visual format, because I struggle with it. Be honest with the people that you're doing. I don't understand this. Bring it to me, charts. Give me a chart so I can see what's going on. And don't stop asking until you get it. Number two, really think about those levers. Do I need to pull sales? Do I need to pull my margin or / COGS? Or do I need to pull on expenses as the lever to make the biggest difference? And you can ask your accountants that. And number three, don't settle, because what I see is people, because this is a nervous thing, people will like ask for things, the accounts will push back, and they'll go, well, I asked the account, they said no, not good enough. This is your business. Accounting is there to serve you. If you're not getting what you need, don't stop. And you need to keep, like, find another accountant. You're welcome to call us if you know, like, our focus is sub trades. Call us and we'll see if we can help you. But do not stop. Do not rest until you have it. This is one of the foundational parts of the business. You got to get sales right. You got to get finance right. You got to get your marketing right. You got to get your people right. Like, there's those cornerstones of business, and finance is always one of them. So don't look for the quick, easy answer. Look for, how do I fix this in the long run and feel empowered so I understand my financial position? I understand that Keish is facing a business. I have a plan of attack to deal with. It's quick, simple, intuitive. That's your standard, and you can't stop till you get there.
Amazing. You offer to our members too. You have a benchmarking tool that I thought was really neat. Are you cool if we give this out to the people on the podcast?
For sure. Okay. I can also show it to you real quick.
Sure. Throw it up. We were talking about this earlier when we first started talking about visualizations of data, and you were talking about benchmarking against last year, going this year versus last year versus your budget. There is also an ability to go against a benchmark in the industry. So how did you get this data? Where did it come from? What are you doing with this thing? Because our members are loving this.
Okay, awesome. We've gotten a few members who'd signed up. So essentially what we've got, let me just pick the right window here. It should be this. This is really just pulling data from the financials, and you know, you can have like a couple of months at a time here, for example. But this is really designed for members and coaches to get together, and this is where, like, okay, there's some benchmarks here, and we can actually set benchmarks exactly using BTA benchmarks. They can be customized, so if you've got a unique industry or you don't have the benchmarks, or your business is a bit unique compared to the everybody else, it's fine. But you can just look, here's an example, direct labor, the benchmark's 24. This particular result is almost 29, so it's 5% high. If you want to see that, sorry, I just have to move the windows around a bit. If you want to see that in dollar value, the dollar impact of that is $23,000. And it just goes to the key line items, you know, materials, equipment, labor, advertising, sales, vehicle, other, like kind of all standard stuff that we all have that's relevant for pretty much whether you're a trade or whatnot. And it also breaks it out by different classes as well. So you can look at those benchmarks by class and have custom benchmarks. So really what the goal with this tool is, which is available for all BTA members, and I'm embarrassed to say I don't have a QR code to put up. I normally do, and I'm not at home today I'm on the road and I was a little scrambled.
We can put a link in the description for everyone if that's cool with you.
Okay. And so what that'll allow you to do, particularly with your coach, is I imagine I know this because I've talked to some coaches, but I would also bet for the coaches I haven't talked to, one of their biggest frustrations is having a difficult time getting financial information from members. And one of the members' biggest frustrations, it feels like so much work to provide that information to their coaches. So this tool actually brings it together. So the coaches have access to it. The members have access to it. There's zero work involved. It's a free tool to actually help make the BTA membership more valuable, but also help you win with your coaches. So it's really a tool to kind of help the coaches, help the members, automate it all, and just be able to have more meaningful conversations with coaches.
Outside of our members, because there's other people that'll be listening to this, is this relevant to them as well, or is it going to be a bit of a misstep for them?
Well, really, we do, like, we'll customize this with BTA benchmarks in it. So that might be a little bit hard to come to in the sense of... But if you can sign up, if you're not a member, and then you can set up your own benchmarks. The best way to figure that out is you can look online. There's going to be some good resources online, or like I said before, ask your bank. And then you can put that in there and you'll just have an automated review to check your benchmarks every month.
Cool. So members get the BTA benchmarks. Non-members, you'll have to do some research, but at least then once you have them, you can use it to pit it against and see what's going on. Cool.
We do have a little bit of work for some of the BTA industry groups because you have that monster spreadsheet. So there will be some work to upload that. But literally, as soon as we get anybody in that industry, we can populate that. That'll take minutes on our end.
Sounds good, Spencer. Anything else you want to say? Any final words?
No, I just, you know, the one thing is I might have said before, you know, the reason I got into this is because I believe owners, entrepreneurs, business owners can change the world. And our role is to help them through their financial blind spot. I love helping owners. If you're really stuck, you're welcome as well to put my contact details up there. Please reach out if you feel we can help you. I'm happy to. Just for context, we typically start with people who are between 2 and 15 million trades-based businesses is our primary sweet spot. Would love to help if we can. And if not, reach out anyway, and I'll just give you my best thinking. I'm here to help business owners win.
Spencer Sheenan, Shift Financial, thank you so much, my friend. There's so many good nuggets in today's chat, so thank you for your time.
Amazing. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Talk to you later. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.